I think that the toughest thing about Easter is that if we take it seriously, it calls for a radical conversion of our imagination. And by that I mean our way of seeing the world. And that there are several elements in this passage from the end of John's Gospel which talk about what that change is. It's a world in which peace is supposed to be the hallmark of human existence. And by that, the biblical notion of peace is always that of relationships between people. Always relationships between people. That's the only place that peace exists. And this is where I say it's very hard for me to get my head around it, get my imagination, because I assume that everybody's going to be defensive, angry, vindictive. Not all the time, of course. But it's a ready response to life, I think, for most of us, most of the time. And that's business as usual. That's standard operating procedure. And to imagine that we really are called beyond that, to really be at peace with each other, which means what? We don't have to be afraid of each other. Because that's the heart of peace, of course, as we get it all through the writings of John and the rest of the Bible, too, for that matter. But peace is supposed to be the hallmark. And if we have that image of the world and of my place in the world, then all this other stuff begins to fall into place. It's just so the forgiveness of sins. You'll notice it's not just given to a few people. In the early church, the so-called forgiveness of sins was something that the collectivity did, the group did, with each other. Only later do we have the whole business of sacramental confession and one-on-one, as we know it today. And of course, that's crucial to this business of peace, that I can actually forgive and be forgiven. And in that lies the heart of peace. It is, again, I keep running up against the reality of the world that I know, that I exist in, where arrogance and power and as violence is the order of the day. And yet this is what we're called to, this astonishing thing. Paul radically calls it a new creation. We are new creatures. We have a new Adam. We have a whole new way of human beings coming into the world and living with each other. The new Adam. Unlike the old Adam, who was able to live naked and unashamed with everybody. Fear-free. And it has to be pervasive. It cannot be just, you know, a one of. You know. This is where the whole pattern of our human existence is supposed to be transformed. But as I said, again, it is very hard for me even to imagine, even to conceive, to imagine that that's the way the world is supposed to be. I can walk around bruised, bloody, sometimes bowed, sometimes unbowed. But nevertheless, I take the bruising and the bloodiness for granted. It's the human condition, we say. And what this astonishing man did was to say, no, we're not called to live that way. In fact, to live that way is sin. So it's by dint of Jesus' life that we even begin to understand what sin is. Sin is disconnection, radical disconnection. It's the introduction of fear and defensiveness in our relationships with each other, with everybody. And to think that we are called beyond that, to think this is what God calls us beyond. That's why I say, in these Sundays after Easter, to pray for a conversion of my imagination. It's not going to make living any easier, that's for sure. In fact, it may make it more difficult at a number of points. because the contrast should become sharper and sharper and sharper between the way we are and the way we're called to be. But there you have it. That's what life from the dead is supposed to be about. That's what Jesus being raised by God is supposed to be all about. Finally, a word about this business with Thomas. This is very strange. You don't know historically what happened, and even when Thomas bursts out, "My Lord, my God," according to Raymond Brown, he's not talking about Jesus as divine. This is just a kind of explosion of enthusiasm. But Thomas stands as an anomaly in the Gospel of John, because the Johannine Jesus constantly objects to miracle-based faith. Over and over. "You guys believe because you had a free lunch." And Jesus gets really upset at that. Why? Because it doesn't call on our depth. It doesn't call on our depth. What do I mean by that? If we look at this man and the way he operates, and to see in him and the way he operates the prospect for myself, that's very hard. And because we, by and large, don't live from our depths, we live in terms of Survivor or Canadian Idol or the latest news report. We live in this weird church today where all the guns are from the Vatican are pointing outwards. It's not what God calls us to. It's not what God calls us to, but precisely to say, what does it mean to be a human being? What does human life, a truly human life, really consist in? And that's what Jesus is calling us to. Not holes in my hand and in my side and all this other stuff. And of course he wants to say, and this is the whole point of the thing, you don't see this. You don't see this realized in the world. And I'm not around to exemplify it. But to believe in that. To believe in that possibility. To believe as that to which God calls us. That's where we're supposed to be.